I mean, I don't, I'm not dedicated to it, but we also definitely teased it, didn't get to half of it, and then we'll never come back to it.
Which is, that's like pretty tea now. Episode 77 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I'm your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett and Craig, good to be speaking with you guys again. We're actually recording on schedule, which is always a momentous occasion. How ready are the two of you to live in a world where Rick Porcello is the Cy Young winner?
I was born ready for this.
As ill prepared as I am for this podcast.
Poor Rick Porcello.
Is he going to be the first person to win a Cy Young while being on a hacking mass team?
I think he just most certainly will be.
He's just crushing me.
I'm pretty sure I have him too, Craig. I haven't looked in a while, but I'll have to go back and check.
Yeah, him and Hellickson are just sinking my entire team.
So yeah. when you try to have good teams, they suck. And when you try to pick a team that sucks,
yeah, I'm bad at this. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the gist, right? Well, thank God this podcast focuses on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. So, you know, player performance isn't super relevant.
Exactly.
So, last week, we teased a whole new series about the tops of every sort of fantasy position, or dynasty league position, I should say, who we think is the top performer right now, who was a top performer, who's fallen off. Basically, just try to figure out who the top three or five guys are per position before we get into all the heavy off-season rankings and look at these things a little bit more in depth. So we are going to start today's podcast by continuing that with first base, which we promised you we would get to last week, and then we did not get to, but unless this is your first time listening to Tino, you probably knew to expect that. So Brett, do you want to run us through the paces with first baseman?
Yeah, so, you know, we'll talk about this, but I don't know how much traction there's really been at first base between this year and last year compared to other positions. It feels like there is less.
Well, the sentence isn't going very well.
I know. I have something going on my computer. I can't figure out how to turn it off.
It took me 6 minutes almost to boot up Skype just to get on this call. So I truly am your son. If you ever wanted a paternity test, I think that counts.
Sounds good. So first baseman. So I was looking back at the, I was looking back at my positional rankings at the beginning of the season to see the top five here. And I'm curious to start off by asking you guys just to give me a number of how many of this group of five would not be in your top five next year off the top of your head. You know, don't give me names, just give me a number. So Paul Goldschmidt was at one, Anthony Rizzo at two, Jose Abreu at three, Miguel Cabrera at four, and Joey Votto at five. So Craig, how many of those five are you kicking out of the top five for Dynasty Leagues for the coming season?
All right, run them back real quick for me again. Just last names are fine.
Yeah, Goldie, Rizzo, Abreu, Miggy, and Votto.
I think I don't know if I'm kicking out anything more than one guy, and it would be Abreu. I know he's picked it up kind of since August started, but it, you know, that was a prolonged stretch, and I think it's enough that I'm not out on him entirely or anything, but I don't know that he should be in that same tier as those guys. And Votto has just been otherworldly in the second half. And I think, I don't know, I would potentially put Freddie Freeman up into that fifth, kind of that fifth spot among those five guys. He's had a really good year, and I think I'd opt for him over Abreu at this point.
Ben, same question.
I'm going to follow instructions and say one.
Thank you, Ben.
Sorry.
So I assume we are all in agreement that that Jose Abreu is the guy that drops out.
Yes, and I also agree that he would drop out for Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, so let's talk about Abreu first. So how, Ben, how concerned are you about Abreu's long-term value? He'll turn 30 before opening day next year. He's been, you know, he started off this season terribly, but you know, as Craig alluded to, he's been pretty great. In the second half, he's hitting .336, .392, .555, with 14 home runs and 44 runs batted in, and that's peak Jose Abreu. But
yeah,
despite that, I think we're all still in agreement that he drops a little bit. But has he done enough in the second half that he is comfortably either six or seven, depending on player preference at that point?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think he's probably six for me. It has less to do with me thinking he's done and more me just being impressed with Freeman and understanding how much younger Freeman is than Abreu. I think as a fantasy community, we sort of forget how quote-unquote old Abreu already is. Like you said, he's already turning 30, even though he's fairly new to us. So I'm not super concerned, and Abreu is still posed to have a very very good fantasy season. I mean, he's going to be right around 300. He could theoretically challenge for 30 bombs, probably high 20s, but I'd be super comfortable with him as my long-term first base keeper. I just slightly prefer Freddie Freeman now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the thing is that, you know, if you follow a typical kind of aging pattern, like one of the older ones, which might apply more to first baseman than other ones. Freeman is 26 this year and is seeing the uptick in power. He's hitting for a better average, all of that kind of stuff. So I just think it's more, like Ben said, about what Freeman is doing and just like a little bit of loss luster for Abreu. But I do think he can be kind of what we were expecting Abreu to be coming into this season, which is not quite as good as people were expecting going into 2015, but still pretty good.
Okay, so let's use this to transition to talking about Freddie Freeman. You know, Freeman's had a pretty interesting year by his standards. His obviously we talked about the power is way up. The strikeout rate is up as well, and the batting average is up. So something has to give here. What do you, Craig, what do you think his, well, let's set an over-under for power for Freddie Freeman next year. If I put the over-under at 26.5, are you going over or under?
I'm going to go over. I know it's a big power bump, but I also, in general, it's big for him. He went from 18 the last 2 years to 31 this year. The difference to me is that, you know, he only played in 118 games last year. He's been in 150 this year. I know the year before he had a full season, only hit 18, but I think there's a power progression for him in general, and that it was kind of, we didn't see it as well because of, you know, the 40 some missed games last year, and that, you know, I'm not sure I would expect another 30 plus homer season, but given the number you said, I think it's entirely feasible that he does that entering his prime.
Okay, so let's talk about batting average. I mean, Freddie Freeman is one of those guys, and you know, he's a perfect example of why you don't regress to a league average BABIP when you're looking at either over or under performers when it comes to batting average. So Freddie Freeman has a .373 BABIP this year, which, you know, you might just look at glance at on the stat page and say, well, okay, he's due for some huge regression. But 2013, he had a 371 BABIP. 2014, he had a 351 BABIP. He's a career 342 BABIP guy. Even with the slight elevation in strikeouts, Ben, where would you feel comfortable pegging his batting average range for next year?
285. I think the average is more likely to fall than the power will. I think 280 to 285 with 25 to 30 homers is about right.
Yeah, and by the way, I think, you know, another reason to buy the power to back up what Ben is saying is that he's hitting the ball in the air more than he ever has. He's at 40% this year. Last year was just under 36%. And that change, and if he's making, you know, good contact, it's not like he strikes out a ton. I mean, it's 24.5% this year, but he makes good contact. And if he's elevating the ball more, he's going to put more over the fence. That's just how it's going to work.
And he's also, there's been a slight increase in walks with the strikeouts, which I know could be a function of lineup more than skill, but it's not like he's selling out for power and swinging and missing a lot. Just the overall approach has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, it's a stereotypical change, right? I mean, you have a player who has power and potentially becomes more selective in order to tap into more of the power at the exchange of some of his contact. But I think the point that Craig had was something that I was going to hit if he did not. The fly ball percent is really important, because, you know, you see a jump in home runs, you kind of glance at the home run to fly ball rate, and, you know, his home run to fly ball rate this year is the highest of his career, but it's not that much higher than his career average. He's at 19% this year. He was over 15% for his career. So you're not talking about a huge, you know, talking about like a Drubal Cabrera 2012 jump in home run to fly ball rate. And I have no idea off the top of my head whether 2012 was the year that he did that. Was it earlier? 2011? One of those years.
It's interesting, just because you've sort of made us say the stat lines out loud, what we think Freeman and Abreu will do. It seems like we sort of think they're going to have very similar seasons next year, but Freeman is 3 years younger and trending up, whereas Abreu is older and either stagnant or slightly down. So less of a difference next year, it seems like, than just really the dynasty angle.
I agree. I think if you're just drafting in a redraft, I might actually take Abreu over Freeman just in 2017, very, very slightly. But I certainly have I have Freeman above Abreu in a dynasty format because of where they are on the aging curve.
Right, and, yeah. And you know, we warn people away from getting crazy with contextual factors, but when it's as close as Freeman and Abreu are for next year, that's when you do use contextual factors. And Abreu's better park and better supporting cast, I think, also start to matter a little more.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that we have no idea. The Braves are going to play in a new park next year, and we have no idea what those dimensions are going to be like. So there's a little bit more risk there, just because, you know, have you guys heard whether it's going to be more pitcher-friendly or more hitter-friendly? I don't feel like I've heard anything about that.
More taxpayer-friendly, I think, if anything.
Definitely.
The one thing I'll say in regards to that, I haven't heard how it's going to play or anything like that, but he has gotten the ball, like, he's distributing where he's hitting the ball a lot more evenly this year. He's like 30% opposite field, 33% center field, and 37% to the pull side. And he's had a bunch of homers to the opposite field. So it might be something that, you know, it seems to me he's kind of just putting the ball to all fields. And, you know, I don't know how the park is going to react to that, but it seems like he at least has the ability to, you know, as long as it's not insane one way or the, you know, either to left or right field or anything like that, it shouldn't impact him too much.
Yeah, he's at, you know, to that point, he's actually been a way, way better hitter on the road this year anyway. He's got a 1,057 OPS on the road, which is really high. So I think we've covered Freddie Freeman inside and out at this point. So we talked a little bit about Votto. Miguel Cabrera, is anyone concerned about a near-term drop-off with him?
Near-term?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, I guess just the age and body type give a little bit of pause, but not enough for me. I didn't even really seriously consider dropping him out, and that's partially because there aren't a lot of good, super great first basemen. You know, I think if anyone was going to take a leap this year, it was Hosmer, and he didn't really do so, and I'm not confident enough in Will Myers to put him ahead of Miggy yet, so I think he's pretty safe.
Yeah, I
agree.
I think we'll get to this as we talk about other positions, but first base is... first base is just really not that great anymore, at least from a depth perspective.
And, well, there are. I mean, like there is depth. It's just not always from. Like, I mean, Daniel Murphy is providing huge amounts of. Like, you can play him at first, right? I mean, that's the advantage of first is that you get guys who you can play there.
Yes, you do have guys that you can play there, but assuming that those guys are being used at the positions they're more naturally used at, I mean that you might get to the point where if there's a player who's first base and second base eligible, it might not be crazy anymore to play that player at first base if you have a better second baseman.
And the odds are based on this year, you have a second baseman who can hit for better power than a first baseman.
Yeah.
I'm using Brad Miller at first base in a league in which I'm in contention on purpose in 2016.
That's a thing.
It's not a deep league.
Yeah. You touched on it before, but we can't talk about first baseman without talking about Eric Hosmer. Craig, where are you on Hosmer now? Or is this who he is? Are we letting go of the next step at this point, or is it still there for you?
I mean, so probably something closer to splitting the difference. I mean, he's also just 26 this year. I don't know. This is not extremely dissimilar to his 2014 season. I know he's hitting for more power, but the entire league is hitting for more power, so that's not really that helpful. I am wondering kind of if last year's seeming breakout when he hit, you know, just under 300 was maybe a little bit BABIP driven, in that he had a 336 BABIP compared to this year's 305. The year before was 312, and both of those years he hit 270. So both of the years he's hit kind of around 300. He's got, you know, better batting average on balls in play, which is not entirely unexpected, but his career average is a little closer towards the league average. And so, yeah, I think I don't know that he doesn't have another gear. I just don't know that he's going to get there.
Okay. So last question on first base, Ben, if you could pick one sort of, dark horse player who could have a big enough season in 2017 to become a top five first baseman, who we haven't talked about yet, who would that be for you?
Dark horse at first base is tough. I mean, how would you guys feel about Hanley if he doesn't?
I was literally looking up Hanley right now.
Yeah.
I was hoping honestly, Brett said like last one, and I was like, I'm gonna say something about Hanley either way because
he's just been otherworldly the last 6 weeks, and he's like pretty decent at first base. I mean, I don't, he's not gonna win a gold glove there, but he's more than playable. So we could be looking at a solid 4 or 5 year run of Hanley being a top 10 first baseman.
Yeah, you say last 6 weeks, but and that's true. He's been on another level the last 6 weeks, but his second half line overall is up to 297, 356, 623.
Right. And Hanley, Hanley is inherently streaky, so I don't think he's ever going to do that for a full year.
No.
But it's certainly, everyone who was worried about him last year, the talent is still there.
Yeah.
Right. And,
Hanley,
and Sorry,
Hanley Ramirez has been more valuable this year at first base than Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I mean, the thing is, like, he went through a pretty rough stretch at some point in the first half, but even then, it was an 800 OPS, and, you know, with a hot streak coming, like, if that's your resting baseline or whatever it is, that's fine.
Yeah, and
go ahead, Brett.
I was just say he's, you know, given how he's been hitting the last the last 6 or 8 weeks, in the next 10 days, it's tightly enough packed that he could end up as a top five first baseman this season with a continued hot streak in the last 10 days of the season.
Possibly, and if Will Myers continues to suck, he could get top four.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit worried about paying a premium if the Red Sox win the pennant, but we'll see. Huh. Speaking of pennants, now seems like an excellent time to remind you all about Pennant Wars, an online baseball management game where you call the shots as GM of your own baseball franchise in its fictional universe. When you play Pennant Wars, you can build a team that plays your brand of baseball by drafting and developing amateurs, spending big in the free agent market, or making blockbuster trades with other owners. If you haven't done a sim before, we encourage that you check it out. You can do everything from setting your lineups to your rotation in your bullpen, custom strategies, and you can even make a custom home stadium, much like the Braves do every 5 years. You can do your best to evaluate players as they progress and regress through the entire arc of their career. You know, strategy and planning are really the keys to success, and odds are, if you're listening to a Dynasty League podcast, those are some of the things that really appeal to you when you play. So if you are interested in Pennant Wars and you want to check it out, please head over to pennantwars.com and try it out completely for free today. And if you do enjoy it, let us know, because I think we're interested to get some listener feedback on here and see if you guys have some anything constructive to say, because it would be the first time anyone was constructive on Tino.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to give us the benefit of the doubt, but we're not very constructive.
No. Nothing could be worse than last week. So at least we're rebounding from that.
Yeah, we've been using actual numbers, and there haven't been really long pauses. I'm really proud of us.
And Brett, if getting back to what the point Craig brought up earlier about playing guys who are eligible for first base and another position, you know, actually playing them at first base now, is that, if you had to pick one for next year, would you play Enya at Singer or at first base? Welcome back to episode 77 of Tino. We are now going to reward you for listening to one of the few actually coherent and well-put-together segments we have by talking about the Dynasty League value of Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim players. I don't even know if that's still their full name. I don't really care. So because one series is not enough, we decided that we needed another series that we could rely on and, of course, forget every other time we record. And what we're going to do is go division by division and just spend 5 or 6 minutes on each team, breaking down players who have really exceeded or fallen below expectations, and very briefly touching on minor league players as well, except for the Angels, because they don't have any minor league players. But this will be pretty basic. You know, we're not going to talk about, for example, Mike Trout with the Angels. We're also going to try not to talk about any of the 10,000 scrubs they have. More guys in the middle, guys who took big years, big steps forward, and we're not sure if they're real. Guys who struggled, we think they're going to bounce back. You'll get the gist as we go along. So we are going to start and quickly power through the Angels, who are just an abysmal team, just absolutely terrible. We were discussing some of these names before we started the second segment, and it's not good out there. You have Nick Buss. You have Jeffrey Marte. There's an Ortega. I don't know which Ortega. Cliff Pennington is still playing baseball. It's not looking good. So we're not going to talk about any of those players, but the one guy I do want to throw out... Oh, that was a Freudian slip. The one guy I do want to throw out there is Matt Shoemaker, who was having a pretty good year before he was struck in the head by a line drive recently. ERA of 3.88, a FIP of 3.5. He was striking out, 21% of all batters faced. So pretty un-Matt Shoemaker-like, or I guess maybe I was a little lower on him than most. But I'm wondering what you guys think of Shoemaker now, assuming he makes a full recovery and can start every time next season. Did 2016 do anything to change Shoemaker in your eyes, Brett?
Yeah, it definitely did. Although, you know, that stretch where he was, you know, arguably one of the best pitchers in baseball, I think was overstated. He's, you know, he's probably the person who I got the most flack for not putting in the top 500 at the beginning of the season, except nobody cared until about the beginning of June. But he'll definitely be in there this time around. I think I'd probably be comfortable slotting him just outside the top 50 or 60 pitchers. I think given the park and given now multiple stretches of pretty strong performance, I think calling him a borderline top 60 starter is reasonable. That said, I think that's expectations should not be sky high. I don't think this is, despite the stretch, I don't think he's someone who has a huge amount of upside. I think at best you're looking at about, you know, eight strikeouts per nine, an okay ERA, and a pretty good whip because he doesn't really walk anybody. How far off am I on that, Craig?
No, I think that's about right. I mean, I think there are going to be times he runs together a bunch of good starts, but I don't know how different that makes him from someone like, you know, like Ty Walker. We all saw, you know, tear off a run of starts at the end of 2015, and he's been pretty inconsistent. I think, you know, inconsistency is just built into who Matt Shoemaker is. I know he had the run where he had a great ERA of like 2.15 over, you know, six or seven starts, and even towards the end of the year, like when he from July 16th through September 4th, which was his last start, he had a 3 ERA, and that's great, but he also only had 46 strikeouts in 63 innings. So, like, you know, it's just, I don't think you're ever going to get like the complete pitcher for the complete season, and if you did, I think, you know, we'd see a backup in some of those rates. It's one of those things where he was so good, but he was also, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was using his splitter like, you know, 40%+ of the time, maybe more. And I just kind of wonder how sustainable that is as a starting pitcher, either before hitters get, you know, adapt and are able to track it better and hit it better, or, you know, before something happens to your arm or your shoulder or something, just because that's a lot of non-fastballs to throw.
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal pitch on your arm. I mean, he was running right about 40% for the season once he started pitching well, and that's just I can't imagine that's something that is sustainable for that long. I mean, last year he was 22-24%, so yeah, that's a huge jump.
Yeah, and like I said, I might be wrong on the exact percentage or whatever, but it was a significantly higher percentage, I think.
Okay, so one more Angels pitcher question before we'll move on. Craig, who is going to have the best fantasy career out of Tyler Skaggs, Andrew Heaney, and Alex Mayer?
Ooh, well, I think we can throw Mayer out. I would throw him out immediately.
If it's Mayer, why is there an E?
What?
Why is there another E if it's Mayer? I don't. It's not your fault. I just don't care.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just assuming.
It's usually best to assume I'm wrong first.
Yeah.
So that's the safe play.
I just assumed it was Mayer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he's out immediately. I don't think he's in the conversation. That's a tough one. I like both of them. They're about the same age. I'd probably go with Skaggs. I think he's a pretty good pitcher, and I know, you know, he's definitely had ups and downs and health issues, which obviously are afflicting Heaney as well. But I do think that Skaggs has kind of shown us how good he can be at times, and if he, as long as he, you know, keeps that longer stride and doesn't listen to what the Diamondbacks told him once upon a time, he's going to be fine. So I'd pick Skaggs, but that is tough. That's a close one.
Okay. Brett, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I am going to read you three names of actual Angel players this year. One of them finished in the top 25 among all Angels players per ESPN's player rater. The other two were in the bottom 40. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
AJ Achter, Todd Cunningham, Juan Graterol.
So I have to pick which one was in the top 25?
Top 25.
I'm going to say Todd Cunningham.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was AJ Achter. AJ Achter was what you were looking for.
I think it's Achter.
I don't, you know, again, I think it's actually Meyer. Achter or Achter or whoever he is threw 33 innings of 3.27 ERA ball in 23 games, and he is the 23rd best Angel to do anything related to fantasy this season at -1.47. This has been your 2016 Los Angeles Angels breakdown.
Not convinced. I don't understand how. I mean, Carlos Perez is a normal name, but the two other catchers are Jet Bandy and Juan Graterol.
It's pretty good. It's I want to be living that Jeff Bandy life. That's pretty.
And on top of that, Carlos Perez is one of like three Carlos Perezes in his family.
I know the non Carlos Perez catchers both sound like something that you put in a vehicle.
Yeah, I was going to say Juan Graterol sound. Yeah, that is definitely like a product line under Pennzoil.
Yeah. Graterol? Yeah. I was thinking more like a fungus cream, but I think either of them work.
Yeah, and Jet Bandy, I just can't even.
I think Jet Bandy is one of the porn accounts that favored my Devern Hansack tweet.
Well, Carlos Martinez followed immediately.
Yeah. Brett Lowry was on that 3 years ago, dude. All right, let's mercifully move on to a team with a little more dynasty relevant talent, the Houston Astros. And just for comparison's sake, oh, actually, their 25th player overall is Jake Marisnyk, and he was even worse, so we won't go there. But let's talk about some interesting players for the Astros this season. Something that I think we probably all would have taken the under on when the season began, Evan Gattis has caught a fair amount. He's certainly going to have catcher eligibility for next season. And, you know, if this sort of usage continues, I mean, I think we're looking at potentially a few more years of Evan Gattis having catching eligibility. So not a great triple slash, 250, 318, 510, but 30 homers and 67 RBI from catcher is nothing to sneeze at. So, Craig, Evan Gattis turns 30. He just turned 30, so for all intents and purposes, next season is his age 30 season, age 31 season. What age will Evan Gattis be when he finally loses catcher eligibility?
33.
He'll be 33. Is the last year he'll have it?
No, I think that's when he'll lose it. I think it's extremely limited.
So you think next year is the last year he catches?
Yeah.
Interesting. Where do you think he will rank among top catchers next year?
Crap. I don't know.
Here, let me give you some context. Sorry, now I need to set this thing to all teams, which is very difficult for me to do. He is fifth among all fantasy catchers this year, behind Luke Roy, Ramos, Posey, and Real Muto.
I'm going to say, like, eighth.
Okay.
I'm just not really in on him, and I think you're going to get, like, a full season out of Gary Sanchez. You know, I don't know what Schwarber's situation is going to be. Grandal has been really good since just, like, a putrid first 3.5 months. Maybe eighth is aggressive, but yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to drop a spot or two.
Fair enough. Brett, let's talk very briefly about, is Ken Giles even worth talking about, or do we want to just say he's a reliever? Who cares?
He's a reliever with strikeouts who will start the year with a job. start next year with a job. So,
yeah, okay.
That's it.
All right. So instead, let's talk a little bit about Dallas Keuchel, who I know BP as a whole was not super optimistic about heading into the season. No one picked him to repeat SI or anything like that, and he most certainly hasn't. The advanced metrics indicate he's had a more average year than a terrible year, but in terms of what's actually happened, it's been pretty ugly. 4.55 ERA in 168 innings. The walks are up substantially. The strikeouts are down. The ground balls are way down. Keuchel is 28. He will turn 29 in the offseason. So how do you view him for 2017? Is this a decent buy-low candidate, or is this someone you're staying away from?
I think he's more of a buy-low candidate than I thought he was going to be when we talked about him earlier in the year. He got better as the year went on, and obviously now he's done for the season. But assuming he bounces back to full health, I think, you know, I think it's reasonable for him to, you know, to be a reliable SP3, to be sort of in that 35 to 40 range. I think there's still enough upside there to feel at least somewhat comfortable with, and I honestly I thought I was going to have him lower by this point, but yeah, the days of him being a borderline SP1 are well over.
Fair enough. Craig, who has more fantasy value next season, Alex Bregman or Gurriel?
Ooh, man, that is harsh. My default is to say Bregman. I like Gurriel, and I think he'll be useful, but I don't really see the upside in fantasy that Bregman can bring. I know he's hitting for a nice average, but I don't know. I'm not sure I see the power the power ceiling that I do with Bregman. I'll say Bregman.
Brett?
Yeah, I say Bregman also. And I say that, okay, as someone who likes Gurriel.
Okay, so I have one more question before I'm going to let you guys decide if you want to talk about any prospects. A.J. Reed had an excellent year in AAA and has been pretty awful in the majors, albeit only in 133 plate appearances, but he has not done anything to inspire confidence in that limited sample size. Brett, A.J. Reed is not going to be prospect eligible next season, it looks like, right? 133 PA, although it's at-bats, right?
So yeah, it's at-bats, so he probably will be. He's got 114.
Oh, he will be. Okay, so that makes the question even easier. Is A.J. Reed a top 20 fantasy prospect next season?
Top 20 fantasy prospect. I am going to say yes.
Top 15?
Probably not.
So would you say he's in the 15 to 20 range?
I think I would say he's in the 15 to 20 range, Ben.
Excellent. Brett or Craig, anyone on the prospect side that you want to talk about?
Brett?
Not really.
That works for me. We're actually pacing.
I mean, we could talk about Kyle Tucker, but he's, I mean, I like Tucker a lot, but I think that's not too uncommon.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Fisher's in AAA at this point, or at least by the end of the season. Francis Martis is another name to keep an eye on. He was at AA. I wouldn't be surprised to see him make an appearance at some point next year.
Sorry.
Yeah. Better question, are any of the prospects in the Astros system who we, reasonably talked about before the start of 2016, are any of them in particularly different places for you from a fantasy standpoint, or is everyone just sort of on? I feel like all of their prospects are just sort of on the path, which is a good thing, but they don't really have.
I think Martes has kind of taken a bigger step forward than I would have thought. I mean, he's in AA. He's not even 21. I wouldn't have thought that he'd be at AA at this stage in the game. And even Fisher, I'm not sure I would have put on the brink of the majors. So, and I don't know that he's technically there, but in terms of being at AAA, he is. I agree with you in terms of on Fisher prospect value, maybe not. For Martes, I think it's a somewhat significant step forward.
Sounds good.
And just other names, I know Mal Rubio has been very big on Franklin Perez, who's in their lower minors, but he was not on my radar at all. And he and Albert Abreu are two arms that are worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, they always seem to have a nice pipeline of arms that come out of rookie ball and get people excited.
Yep.
Hurts my heart that you felt the need to say Mal Rubio to specify which Mal that would be.
Well,
that's how long it's been.
Yeah.
Gotta have him on soon. Okay, we'll move on to the Athletics, which is somewhere in between the Angels and Astros in terms of depressing and intriguing, I think. So, pretty horrific year, but they have had a few interesting campaigns from some players you probably wouldn't have anticipated them from. So, let's start with Chris Davis, who it's probably fair to say is a better fantasy asset than a real-life player because he doesn't really get on base, but he hit 40 home runs with an average that isn't going to kill you. It's not going to help, but he's at 252, 307, 526. He's got 99 RBI. Among all outfielders, I'm going to tell you among all outfielders where that ranks. Just you hold on a second. This is great radio. Any moment now. Among all outfielders, it is 25th, which is actually surprisingly low, but I guess that's what happens when you only contribute in two categories. That's a very long-winded way of asking, Craig, will Chris Davis be a top 30 outfielder next season?
I'm going to say no.
Top 40.
I don't like him as a fantasy asset, but everything you said, I'm gonna say no.
Top 50 for your reference, the 50th best fantasy outfielder right now is Angel Pagan.
Oh yeah, he's gonna be yeah. My concern with Davis and part of my pessimism is that I think potentially because it's not as real life good because he makes so many outs that there's. I think if I were running a team, I would like to see him get fewer than 573 plate appearances. And so, you know, if he drops down to... Because, look, if his rates... Like, his rates in terms of his batted ball profile is extremely similar to what he did with the Brewers. And with the Brewers, he had 27 homers just on a function of getting, you know, 130 fewer at-bats. And if you put him there... All of a sudden, his counting stats are way down, and he's not nearly as valuable. So that's the concern. If he gets a full slate of at bats, he's going to wildly exceed my expectations.
Fair enough. Brett, why don't you talk about Sean Manaea, who I think we all liked him, but you were definitely the high man on him, and he's had a very up and down season. What have you seen from Manaea this year, and what do you think we're going to get in 2017?
I mean, you're absolutely right. It's been very up and down, but I think the most important thing is that he's really made it through the full season. I mean, he's got 130 innings or so at the major league level. He probably had 20 innings in the minor leagues before he came up. So at least 150 innings pitched. That's a big step for him because a lot of his question marks have been health related in the past, and you know obviously he's had some performance related questions as well, which bear out in sort of the ups and downs throughout the season. But he has had spurts where he's looked like the really good Manaea, and he's had spurts where he looks like sort of what some people thought he might have topped out at because of his. At times below average command and the things that goes along with that. But he had four starts in a row in July where he walked nobody in four starts, and he didn't outside of his first start of the year, he didn't walk more than three batters in any start. 35 overall in 130 innings. I'd say that's a success for him. I think there's more bat missing potential in the future that I think he can tap into. But I thought 2016 was a great jumping off point for Minaya, and I feel more, even though I was bullish on him coming into the year, I feel more bullish on him after this season.
That makes sense. So I don't want to belabor the point on Sonny Gray because I know we've spoken about him at length before. I will simply ask, Brett, is Sonny Gray a top 25 fantasy arm next season?
No.
Ooh, not even close for you, huh?
No.
Craig?
I think he's right around there. I would probably expect him in like the 25 to 30 range. I think he'll be better.
Brett, why are you so so down on him?
I think it's a combination of health and just some bad factors from this season. I think there's, you know, I would put him inside the top 40, but top 25, I'm not going there.
So Craig, I'm not asking to be mean, and if you don't believe me, you can throw one of my past favorites in my face. How do you feel about your boy, Arismendi, who has actually been pretty good in AAA since he's been traded, but has not had anything particularly inspiring happen to him in the majors?
Yeah, I don't feel great about him. He's been good for Oakland. He wasn't good in AAA, really, for the Cubs. I still think, you know, what there was to like about him is still kind of there. He's only 24. I mean, the problem at this point is contact. He's swinging and missing far too much, and it's, you know, it's not letting him hit for average, which means he's not getting on base enough because he's not someone who walks enough to get away with that, right? I mean, he'd be fine if he hit for an average, but as a fantasy asset, you know, he's got a little bit of pop, and the main attraction is the speed, and he's stolen, what, I guess, 34 bases between two teams at AAA and his three stolen bases for the A's. I think if he got regular playing time, he'd probably be worth a bench spot as a guy you can throw in when you need a steal. But that's obviously a fall from grace from where I liked him before.
All right, one more obscure question, then I'll let you guys talk about whatever you want to talk about for the minor leaguers. Brett, who out of Matt Olson, Max Muncy, and Ryan Healy do you have the most faith in moving forward?
Ryan Healy. I like Ryan Healy.
Has he had like a good second half and I've missed it?
Second half? He's been
Ryan Healy's
unreal.
Hit 301 with 11 home runs in 62 games.
Yep, totally missed that. No idea.
Yep.
Absolutely no idea.
The guy you meant to include was Bruce Maxwell.
Yes. It actually is.
Maybe Mark. Maybe Mark Canna.
No, it was Bruce Maxwell. It actually is Bruce Maxwell.
I knew because I was expecting Bruce Maxwell, and you went with Ryan Healy, and I was like, "Whoa!"
Thank you.
So new question. Maxwell, sub out Healy for Maxwell.
So who was the middle guy? It was
Matt Muncy. Olson, Max Muncy, and Bruce Maxwell. And Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, I'd say Olson, but barely, and I don't feel good about it.
Well, that's a vote of confidence if I've ever heard one.
Mm-hmm.
Any Oakland minor leaguers you guys want to talk about? Anyone want to talk about my boy Franklin? No.
Your what?
Franklin Barreto.
Yes.
Go ahead, Brett.
No, you can talk about him.
Oh, okay. I mean, I think he's still a good power speed option down the line. I've never been as high on him as Ben has, but you know he's acquitted himself quite well. He made it to AAA at the end of the season. It was four games, but he had a really nice year at AA. The power wasn't there that he kind of showed in High A, which, you know, the A's High A affiliate was in the Cal League. And so, you know, I think that's the real question he has to answer going forward, is just how much power he's going to have. Because I believe in his ability to hit, you know, for a good enough average and steal bases. The question is, you know, is he going to be a guy who can get to double-digit home runs or not? And I would probably lean, you know, closer to like the 8 to 10 range than 10 to 15. But there's plenty of value either way for him specifically.
Brett, any other A's minor leaguers you want to touch on?
Just really quickly, I'm starting to come around a little bit on Matt Chapman. I still don't love him, but I was almost just entirely writing him off as a realistic fantasy contributor. I thought he was kind of a poor man's Matt Dominguez. But maybe he's, you know,
I think
a
he's
regular.
Just Matt Dominguez.
Maybe he's just Matt Dominguez, exactly. And in this environment, who knows? If Matt Dominguez was a 24-year-old major leaguer right now, he might hit 30 home runs.
I don't know.
He might strike out 230 times.
I have no idea what to do with that hypothetical.
Yeah.
If Matt Dominguez was a 24-year-old major leaguer, he might hit 30 home runs.
That's true.
So my question is, he's not a minor leaguer because he's in the majors right now, but what do you make of their pitch, like the options they have for pitching? I mean, is Jarrell Cotton a guy you're interested in, like as more than a flyer, or?
Cotton is like the perfect back end A's rotation guy who you take at the end of fantasy drafts.
He's like a better version of Tommy Malone.
Yes. And Malone was very usable.
So
when
usable.
He was with Oakland.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think it's a good spot for him, and I think he absolutely is going to be useful in almost all fantasy leagues, at least in some sort of streaming capacity next year.
I just want to shout out, this is not an analysis of the A's, but I just want to thank them because their minors is fairly barren, in my opinion. But they have really invested in some good names, in my
yes,
opinion.
Yes, they have.
I mean, this draft alone, Dalton Jeffries, Logan Schorr, Skylar Zinski, I'm assuming that's how that's said. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Let me ring in there.
they got Lazaro Armenteros. I mean, Boomer Bogalski.
They still have. Still have Sky Bolt.
Yeah, they still have Sky Bolt too. It's really the lower levels are stocked with names specifically.
It is Logan Schorr.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, but that's how you rebuild. That's how smart teams rebuild.
I agree. It is. Also, obviously, Grant Holmes is. The other name you actually should know, but I don't think that's like I don't think the fantasy payoff is extremely huge, and he's far enough away that I wouldn't be investing heavily there immediately.
Yeah. The only other thing I'll say about a guy that you threw out because of the name thing, but don't let the name fool you. I know more people have heard of Lazaro Armenteros they would have if he wasn't weirdly overhyped for about a 2-month period before everyone started to realize that was not really the case. He's got lots of name value for someone who is is he still 16 or did he turn 17? He turned 17, but
I think it's just because he's got a one name, like the Lazarito. I think it makes it's like
right.
People think it's a big deal. It's not.
Yeah, but no, there's like, you know, there are a lot of people I would take ahead of him in the 16 to 18-year-old range who've been signed internationally like the last year or two.
Boy, if you cut that sentence off at the wrong point, it could have been real awkward.
George,
now I'm
going
to have to listen back to it.
Okay, I'll move us.
Don't do that. Don't do that, George.
I will move us on to our penultimate team, the Seattle Mariners, who are strange from a fantasy perspective. They have a lot of players who I think have sort of outpaced expectations this season, and then a lot who have fallen short as well. So what do we make of Leonis Martin at this point? He was sort of left for dead by the Rangers. I think he had a pretty strong start to the season and then was either terrible or hurt and has been okay-ish since. I don't know if that sounds right to anybody, but 246, 305, 387, which is not great, but 15 homers and 21 steals. He's the, I think, 50th best overall, or no, he was 40th best overall fantasy outfielder this season or something like that. So, Craig, what do you make of Martin? Is he anyone of interest, or is this just sort of what we're going to get?
I think in a TDGX type league, it's completely reasonable. But I think, you know, the power is more than expected, and he did a lot of that during like a really hot first half where he was hitting 280 for a while with a decent amount of power, and I think he's really tailed off. And I think the tail off is more reasonable than the hot start was. That said, I think, you know, 20 plus stolen bases seems completely reasonable if he plays a full season, maybe 25. And I would guess somewhere in like the, you know, 8 to 10 home run range for him. So again, if you're in a TDGX type league that's 20 teams with 5 outfielders and utility spot or something like that, then yeah, he's playable. Otherwise, I think he's fine bench material, because he can usually, you know, if he's going well or even average, you can get by with him. He won't hurt you too much, but he definitely won't help an average, and it's not someone you want to lean on, but probably someone you can if you have to.
Yeah, since he came back from his very poorly timed injury, which happened like right when he was in the middle of that hot streak,
yeah,
he's played in 90 games and he's hitting .240, .290, .346.
And
he's pretty much doing exactly what got him kicked out of Texas.
Well, there were some off the field issues, I think, that contributed to that, but yes.
Well, yeah, yes. So I agree with you. I think Martin is absolutely rosterable and playable in deep mix leagues, and he's a good guy to have around for when he does get a little hot. But you know, he looked like he was going to turn a little bit of a corner, and his end line looks almost exactly like the last, almost exactly like his career in Texas, which is fine from a fantasy standpoint, except it came with fewer stolen bases this year, which is not great from a fantasy standpoint.
Brett, is Edwin Diaz just Dellin Betances but shorter?
I think I don't like him as much as Betances. I think he's clearly very good. I think Diaz he's clearly someone who could strike out, you know, 110 to 120 batters in a full season of relief next year. And with that ballpark, he's got certainly some, a little bit of extra buffer. Safeco is not what we all think it is anymore, but that's a conversation for another day. I think he's probably just outside the top five closers for me going into next year, depending on what happens with one or two rosters, depending on what role Andrew Miller settles into in Cleveland, where Aroldis Chapman signs. I'm not zooming him up into the top five as far as closers go just yet.
That makes sense. So before we get a little further into the dregs here, you know, I just sort of skipped over Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and Kyle Seager because they've just all been good as we expected they would be. Do any of you have anything to add with any of these three guys? Or I just feel like there's not a ton to say.
No, I don't think there's a ton to say. I think of the three of them, the guy who has sort of raised his stock most in dynasty leagues has been Cano. Just because I think they've all been really good, but I think he's been slightly better than even most people's optimistic expectations of Cano coming into this year. And I think it reestablishes that he's fully capable of, you know, pushing near 330 again, you know, in Seattle.
Fair enough. Craig, what is James Paxton?
Oh man, he is, what's the saying? A mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a riddle,
wrapped in a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, exactly, and a very tender shoulder. He throws like 99 now. They changed something in his mechanics, and now he throws super duper hard. And I think he I think he might be really, really, really good. This is like the most he's thrown. I mean, between AAA and the majors, he's thrown like 160 innings. That's the most he's thrown in quite a long time, since about 2003 or 13, I should say. Sorry, that's the concern, is that like you're not going to get more than probably 180 innings at maximum, and there's a decent chance you're going to get like 120. And even with, you know, the souped up fastball, it's not like he's missing an incredible amount of bats that like he's going to vault to like SP1 when he's healthy. It's not even one of those situations. So, I mean, I think ultimately we're looking at like a low end SP3, high end SP4 over the course of a full season, but he'll probably pitch closer to a low two when he's healthy. Something like that. I mean, I buy the stuff. I just don't buy the health at all. Brett, do you have a different read on it?
No. I mean, his fastball, ever since he came back and started throwing like total gas, his fastball has been sort of trickling down, as you would expect. Yeah. He's never thrown this many innings before. So, but given his build and given the velocity and given the sheer number of hits that he's given up this year, his walk rate's been really solid. I think most likely he is he's right in that range, but he is going to be someone who is a nice target for a potential jump in, mm-hmm. in value. I think he absolutely is one of those guys that has about a 15-20% chance of being a borderline ace in 2017. And you know, you get three or four of those guys and one of them works out, then that's wonderful. But Paxton is in that group for me.
Yep, I agree.
Brett, when the Ringer ran that big piece on the sort of etymology of the phrase "let it eat," how offended were you that they didn't talk about Dan Vogelbach?
Pretty offended. it was just a real kick in the face. I adore Dan Vogelbach. I really hope they give him a shot at real playing time next year, because I really think he could do something with it and do something with it reasonably quickly. I think if they gave him 400 at bats next year, I think it's certainly possible that he could hit 275 with 20 homers, and that's pretty substantial. That would make him a very good first baseman these days.
Did you think it was at all like ominous that he missed second base his first time on bases and he was called out for it?
I just thought he was over exuberant. I forget when that was like 2 weeks ago, and I was awake for some godforsaken reason. I was up working on something, and then I was rewarded with a Dan Vogelbach at bat unexpectedly at about 1:30 in the morning,
and he immediately grounded out to second base.
He did.
It was beautiful.
It was one pitch.
Yeah,
very efficient. I appreciate efficiency.
Any other Mariners minor leaguers we want to talk about?
God, no, there are none.
Yeah, their system just blows.
I mean, it's Tyler O'Neill is the guy, right? I mean, that's the guy for anyone targeting fantasy value, and he, you know, made a push through the system, but after him, it's a just hideous scene.
Yeah.
And that's Kyle Lewis was the big name, and then of course he broke his leg in horrific fashion. So we'll see what happens.
Now he's a true Mariner prospect.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's move to our last team and the fun team, the Texas Rangers, who all have a prospect or two that we truly adore. And we've been staying away from the very top players, but I think we shouldn't in this case, because we should talk about Ian Desmond, who has been absolutely insane moving to the AL. Desmond is hitting 287, 338, 456 with 22 homers and 20 steals, and he's had shortstop eligibility this season. So that's pretty damn exciting, and good on you if you saw this coming, because I don't think most of us did. So right now, Desmond would qualify as... God, again, I just keep getting tripped up. You'd think I would learn how to use these filters like an hour into the podcast. Desmond is the seventh best fantasy outfielder behind Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, Charlie Blackmon, Chris Bryant, Starling Marte, and Ryan Braun. He is seventh. That is pretty crazy. Craig, will he be a top 25 fantasy outfielder next season?
I'm going no, but he's going to be right on that border. I know that's a precipitous drop, and to say he's outside of it, but that second half of the season has been shades of 2015 Ian Desmond, right? I mean, he was so good in the first half, but in 60 second half games, he's hitting 238, 286, 359, which is just, I mean, that's just atrocious. And if you want to go for, I mean, seven home runs, that's fine. Five stolen bases, that's okay. But, you know, I don't think that's enough to get him there. And I do think there's going to be, you know, we're going to get some outfield talent. I think, you know, Nomar Mazara could have a big year. I think David Dahl could have a big year. I think we're going to get a bunch of outfield talent from young guys. And that, you know, I think he could be right around that 25 area, but I don't see him kind of replicating the first half enough to buoy his overall numbers to the point that even if he doesn't have as bad a second half, we're looking at the same type of overall season.
Brett, do you agree?
Yes, although I forget what the initial question is.
Is he a top 25 outfielder? And I said no.
A top 25 outfielder? Yeah, I say no, but barely.
Okay. Another interesting Ranger shortstop eligible player. That was eloquently phrased. Elvis Andrus is at 299, 364, 27 this year with 24 steals. He is somehow still only 28. Feels like he should be 38, but he is only 28 and will be 28 for a majority of next season. Is this just a little bit of a... Is this just BABIP because he's up to 330 this year? Lifetime, he's only 312. Last year, he was 283. Is this just a fluctuation, or is this interest you in Andrus more long-term, Brett?
If anything, the thing that interests me about Andrus long-term is that this is the now second year in a row he hasn't been a total zero in power. And it seems strange to say that, but, I mean, he has six home runs. But that is... You know, that's more than he's had. He has a 129 isolated power, which he hasn't had an isolated power over 100 since his rookie season. And if he can, as he ages out of his steals a little bit, which he certainly will, if he can age into sort of near double digit home runs, I dare say maybe one season he can get to 10. Then that makes him slightly more attractive. I mean, the batting average was a little fluky high this year, but not a ton. I mean, the strikeout rate's been headed in the right direction. It's two straight years under 12%. I just think that he is. I think he's going to sort of settle in as you know, maybe sort of that Eric Ibar type who is usually undervalued in drafts, but returns similar value from year to year until he goes full 2016 Eric Ibar and just sucks.
Craig, you brought him up earlier, but you deserve the chance to do this because you nobly answered questions about Arizmendi. Talk about Nomar.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to love him. I know he has not been, you know, he came out of the gates like a house on fire kind of thing. And I know it's not, you know, the overall line is not extremely inspiring. He's at 277, 329, 436, but 20 home runs for a kid who's 21 in 4 months right now. I think he had not turned 21 before he got the call up. It's just something to me that this is just a special bat. And I think, you know, there's nothing new for people who've been listening to this or really even just following him anywhere. I think people have been talking about that for a few years, so it's not exactly surprising. But he's continued to adapt and just be really impressive. I watch a decent amount of the Rangers, and they're a really fun team to watch. And his at bats are gorgeous. He just had his 20th home run. I had retweeted it. There's like a side angle view, and just his ability to open his hips and unload on the ball is legitimately like, I don't even think you have to know a ton about baseball or hitting to watch it and be like, that was really pretty. And I mean, again, like we talked about his hot start, but in the second half, he's played 58 games so far, and he has a higher OPS than he did in the first half. So, you know, I think he cooled off somewhat quickly or harshly, but he's shown the ability to make adjustments, and for him to do that, and, you know, he's slugging 460 in the second half, that's going to play all day, and I think there's obviously more in the tank. So, I don't think top 25 is out of reach for a guy like him. I think it's probably in the 90th percentile of an outcome for next year specifically. But he's just so young and so talented that it wouldn't shock me.
Brett, what is Jurickson Profar?
How much time do you have?
Not much time.
Yeah. Profar is, I want to remain all in on Profar, and I probably will still be, at least in comparison to some others. But I thought this season was going to go differently for him, and it's spiraled down in a way that doesn't make me too happy. It's still unclear as to whether he'll have a job next year with the Rangers, whether he'll end up being trade bait in the off season. A lot of things are up in the air, but from a pure talent standpoint, I still think that what was in there is in there, and I am certainly not giving up on him in any sort of keeper dynasty format, but it was not quite given the opportunity he ended up having, it was not the step forward that I was hoping for.
Fair enough. Any Rangers prospects you guys want to touch on?
How much time do you have?
Upwards of 45 seconds.
Yeah, they've actually seen a bunch of talent leave their system. Obviously, in the last couple of years with trades, but they're not completely devoid of talent either. Yohander Mendez is a guy I've talked about a lot as well, and he's in the majors right now. I like him, and I think he could potentially open the year in the rotation next year or be there pretty soon. Brett, while I dig a little deeper, do you have anyone else in your mind?
Ronald Guzman.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an important guy to mention just because he's almost come full circle now. He was, hyped low level prospect, disappointing prospect as he moved up, or didn't really move up as quickly as most people thought. But now he's really re-solidified himself as a very good offensive prospect in the upper minors. And that is, I always wonder with guys like this whether he is sort of overrated or underrated, or whether he's overrated because people know his name, or whether mm-hmm. he's underrated because they now associate him with failure. So he's sort of blurring the line between post prospect and and recognizable prospect name.
Yep.
So, but no, his path has gotten a lot clearer, and his future much brighter in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and just really quick, just some names. Jairo Barris is another guy who's kind of gone through the prospect ringer, so to speak. He was so bad for a little bit, but he was also so young that he at 21 had a nice season to get himself back on the map. Eric Jenkins was a first round or a second rounder a couple years ago, but their top pick. Not really high on him, but he has speed and knows how to use it. So speed only guy. Pedro Payano had a breakout year before getting hurt. Even guys like as far down as I like their draft this year. Cole Reagans and Alex Spies are two pitchers that I like a decent amount. And down in short season ball, I saw one game of his. Leody Taveras is probably the biggest name down there. They have a I'm blanking on his first name. Tejada
or
Anderson Tejada. Yeah. Is the other him and Taveras are guys that could take somewhat significant steps forward, I think.
Yeah, I think those two guys and Alex Spies are the really interesting players in terms of upside that that are really young and coming up in that system. So I could see any of those three being really big breakout prospects for during 2017.
Yeah, and Mike Matawella, if he could ever get healthy, you know? I mean,
yeah,
can't write him off. So they always have talent kicking around. There's a bunch of guys, you know, I didn't even mention just because we don't have a ton of time, but those are the guys. I mean, those are the guys I think that are kind of on the upswing. There are other names, and that's the thing with Texas is that the pipeline just never really seems empty. It's incredible.
Yeah, and we also just talked about them for, 12-15 minutes without even mentioning Joey Gallo.
Yeah, right
exactly.
Just small detail, they have, you know, still the best power hitting prospect in the minors waiting there.
Yep,
must be nice.
Yeah,
okay, so before I send us off, we would be remiss if we did not mention that by the time this podcast comes out, we will already have seen Sam Miller's last day at BP. So let's just take 30 seconds each and give Sam a little shout out and say what he meant to us. Brett?
I don't think it's actually possible to do that in 30 seconds, but the simple answer is that Sam is everything that I wish I could be as both a writer and an editor, and he's just a really good person to boot. So, good for him.
Correct.
Oh, I get to go. I it's certainly hard to say in a eloquent fashion. I think the big thing is that Sam is just a really genuinely, like, to the core good person, and it's something where, you know, I heard from multiple people who, you know, reached out to him after the announcement came down that he was leaving, and just said that, like, they were kind of verklempt at the response that they got from him. It's like it's not only that he's nice, but he's nice in such a genuine capacity that it really is like touching and uplifting. And he is that to so many people. I think, you know, as Brett said, as a writer and an editor, you know, there are a lot of things that people, when you get into this industry, I think there are a lot of people that seem beyond reproach, right? That you, you look at them and think like, well, there's just this such a big thing that they can't really be what we think they are. And it's that Sam is those things and maybe more of those things than you even thought. So it'll suck not to have him around. That's for damn sure. Ben?
Yeah, you guys already touched on most of what I was going to say. I think, you know, we've all worked with a lot of really, really good writers. We've all worked with a lot of really, really good editors. I've never worked with someone who was as good at both as Sam is. And I've also, I don't know, Sam was my favorite writer before I started at BP, so it's just been amazing to get the chance to work with him and to have, you know, to have your favorite of anything pick up art, something that you do in the same vein, is just an incredibly rewarding experience. And I know Craig and I particularly have a little bit of Sam Miller cult worship, and he has rewarded our bizarre devotion with just some of the highest highs you can possibly have as a writer, in addition to all the wonderful things people have said about him personally. So yep. We will really miss him, and I look forward to continuously living out my days just banking on those 2 to 3 Sam Miller favorites a year on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he's almost as good as Enya. Sorry.
Did we all just talk at the same time?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's the spirit of Enya. Welcome back to episode 77 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes, and if you were debating whether or not to rate or review us after listening to last episode or this episode, please do this one and not episode 76, for which I hope we received absolutely no ratings or reviews. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig on Twitter at CD. That's CD as in
crushed and despondent.
Holstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening. We will love you and miss you, Sam. And have a good night. Coherent.
That was really good.
Go us.
Yeah.
Yay.
What is a Juan Graterol?